Time to get on the telephone line and welcome in our friend Sean McAdam of Boston Sports Journal. Sean, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, guys. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. Help me out here, Sean. I was a little tired last night. I was dozing off a little bit late in the Red Sox game, and I had this weird dream, and in my dream, Nick Pivetta had a complete game.
Yeah, I immediately called Major League Baseball. It was very late, but just to make sure that that was still allowed in 2022. And as it turns out, they have not outlawed it. It's just a rarity. But yes, your eyes were not deceiving you, Rich. It was an honest-to-goodness first batter to the last, same pitcher. And it was kind of fun to see for a change.
Well, it was indeed. And we were talking about it. Bob Ryan was on a couple of days ago talking about his new book. And we discussed one of the great things about baseball is that the potential exists that every night you see something new. And then Tuesday night, Nate Eovaldi goes out and becomes only the third guy in history to give up five homers in an inning. And then the next night, you get a complete game from Pivetta. That's why we love baseball.
Yeah, you're right. There's so many, even though it's kind of become a cliche that every day you go to the ballpark, you have a chance to see something you've never seen before. For those of us who have been, you know, watching this game for a long time, I go back about 55 years now. My introduction to baseball came in the 67 season, so that's a lot of games. And even for someone who sees and watches as much as I do, every once in a while something comes along that kind of catches you off guard. And in my youth, shall we say, complete games were not all that noteworthy, but they are in 2022, so it's kind of fun.
So the 67 season, that was the year for me as well. I mean, I'd watched a little bit before that, but that was the season where I got hooked and became a fan for life and had to see every game.
Yeah, that was the first year that I took in a game at Fenway, and the first year I really kind of paid attention. I would have been about 7 or 8 at that point, and it was the 67 season was a good gateway drug for a young baseball fan.
I loved Yaz, but for me at that time, Tony Conigliaro was my favorite player.
Yeah, the first game I ever went to, Rich, was the day after the beanie. That was on a Friday night against the Angels, if you'll recall, with Jack Hamilton on the mound. And as it happened, my dad had gotten tickets for the following day, a Saturday afternoon game. There's another thing that you don't hear a lot about anymore, Saturday afternoon games. But it was one of those classic cardiac kids, Impossible Dreams 67 type of games where they, you know, we're down by 5 or 6 in the 8th inning and came back and I think walked it off. And every once in a while I go back and, look at that box score and try to conjure up that afternoon in my mind's eye. But, yeah, that was my start.
Well, as any Sox fan of our vintage can state, we still remember the words. And then one night the kid in right lies sprawling in the dirt. The fastball struck him square. He's down. Is Tony badly hurt?
Tony badly hurt. The doctors say he'll be okay, but he won't be back this year. With Tony through, what will we do? Who'll carry us from here?
Carl Yastrzemski. Carl Yastrzemski.
Yeah. I think we both need to get a life, Rick.
Carrie's nodding yes over there. Yeah, I wore out that Impossible Dream album.
Yeah, me too. That and Gold Bruins a few years later.
Yes, yes. We're talking with Sean McAdam here on Downtown. So here we are. It's almost to the quarter pole of the season, 15-22. But with that extra wild card, only 4.5 games out, is it crazy to think that this team can leapfrog all those teams ahead of it and fight its way back into contention?
Well, I don't know about leapfrogging all the teams in front of them, but I certainly am not writing them off yet. I think the next few weeks are very important. In part because of the hole that they have dug for themselves, obviously, at 15-22 through the first 37, as you noted, almost a quarter of the way through the schedule. So, you know, this isn't simply a bad week now. It's a bad start period that has lasted almost 2 months, although they have played a lot better, at least somewhat better, over the last 10 days. But the schedule also starts to help them out. You know, you've got Seattle in this weekend, and they're not horrible, but they're not, they don't have a winning record. You go to Chicago, a team with a lot of talent that is also underachieving, also below 500. You come back, you've got five with Baltimore. That's a huge opportunity to make up a little ground. Then you've got Cincinnati, and then they go out and start a West Coast trip in Oakland. I mean, there's, six straight series there, I think, with nobody, with none of their opponents having a winning record. So, you know, the time to make up some ground is right in front of them. And, you know, the best thing is, you know, people get all, have these daydreams about going on a 10 or 11 game winning streak the way the Astros did or the Yankees did. Those are pretty rare, but if you keep winning series, and that's what they've started to do at least the last two times, taking two out of three out of Texas and two out of three from Houston here this week. And, you know, Texas isn't anything to write home about, but beating the Astros, who had won, I think, 12 or 14 coming in, and is, you know, they're clearly one of the handful of best teams in the league, I think that said something. So we'll see where they stand on Sunday night and go from there.
Well, some guys have been playing well all season long. Devers, Bogart's having great years. J.D. Martinez has been pretty consistent, but some encouraging signs lately from both Kike Hernandez and Trevor Story.
Yeah, sometimes with those guys, it seems like it's, you know, two steps forward and one step back. You'll see a game where, you know, Story has two hits and a walk, and you think, okay, this is the time where he really starts to turn the corner and be the player that they thought they were getting when they signed him. And then the next night, you know, you've got an 0-for and two more strikeouts. But again, it's sort of like that winning streak versus winning series. You know, it doesn't have to be somebody hitting 500 for 2 weeks. If you're, you know, getting a hit or two a night, or at least hitting the ball hard and having a better approach and enjoying better at bat, that's the first step in. And you know, and along that line, Bobby Dalbec is at first base tonight, despite the presence of a right-handed starter for the Mariners. And ordinarily, you'd think, well, why not go with Franchi Cordero at first? But Alex Cora said this afternoon that he's seeing some better things from Dalbec in terms of controlling the strike zone of late, and also, you know, starting to pull the ball a little bit. He is able to go the other way and is strong enough to hit the ball out to right field and right center. But when the homers start piling up, it's when he's, it's mostly when he's pulling the ball, and he's seen more of that. So he's hopeful that that's another guy that is, even if the numbers don't suggest it or the, you know, the stats don't jump out at you, that maybe Dalbec has started to figure a few things out too.
Still nobody there that can actually claim the role of closer. Can they get any help anywhere?
I don't think right away, because if you're looking to get an impact reliever, you're asking another team to essentially wave the white flag before Memorial Day or even before, you know, toward the end of June. It's very rare you see trades in baseball in the first 3 months. Teams are busy evaluating what they have on hand and also getting prepared for the draft, which is even later now than it used to be. You know, it used to happen in kind of early June. Now it's at the tied into the All-Star break. So that, I think, diverts a lot of GMs and executives' attention as they're, you know, keeping one eye on the major league product on the field and their own roster and needs, and another on the draft coming up and going to follow up and take a look at some guys that have been turned in by cross checkers and supervisors. So, but mostly I think it's just hard to get an impact player because the team giving up that, you know, even if you're giving up prospects, the team giving up the established player is telling its fan base, we give up, that, you know, we're not going to win this year. And generally speaking, owners in particular and team presidents don't like that because it doesn't do anything for ticket sales for the second half. So, you know, I understand that Cora has said that, you know, he would like to have somebody kind of claim that role, whether it's Robles or Strom or even Matt Barnes coming back from a disappointing, first 6 or 7 weeks. But, even the bullpen's been a little better of late. And as long as you've got somebody locking it down and closing out games that need to be closed out, I think they can wait a little bit on identifying who that guy is. I think that's probably more important for the long run. And then once you get into October, obviously. But the fact that, Brazier certainly had a bad night in Atlanta and gave up a walk-off homer in the second game of the road trip last week. But the bullpen's been pretty good since then. And I think eventually guys will settle into roles out of default. It's a meritocracy. So when you're pitching well and they feel you can be trusted in high leverage spots, you're going to get the ball when they're tied or up. And if you're not, you're going to be the crew that comes in to eat up innings like a bunch of them did the other night when it became a very short night for Nathan Eovaldi. Maybe somebody emerges here and claims that role, or maybe they have to wait and get that guy in July or even in the first few days of August. But for now, it seems like they like the general momentum that they're seeing, I think, on the roster. And Cora is making those late inning decisions based on usage and availability and matchups.
Last week and a half, we've heard everything from rumors of a Xander Bogaert trade to him supposedly saying he'd be open to listening to a fair offer during the season. Do you see any chance of an in-season contract extension?
Doesn't seem that way. His agent Scott Boras kind of followed that up a day later by slamming the door a little tighter and saying that he'd be willing to sit down with ownership and upper management after the season. Occasionally you see those kind of things get done at the All-Star break when there isn't that danger of diverting a player's attention or becoming a distraction to the team. But I'd be very surprised if anything got done before the end of the year, which isn't to suggest that that it's impossible or that Bogaerts is necessarily going to be gone. But it's hard to imagine a deal of that magnitude getting done when the agent is publicly poo-pooing the timing and the timetable.
Yankees are so far ahead of the Red Sox, they need a stepladder to see him right now in the standings. But no one's going to play 700 or more baseball all season long. Are you surprised that the Yankees are playing as well as they are and have done so for such a long stretch?
I don't think surprise covers it. I think it's more like a shock. This will reveal the depths of my baseball knowledge, but I was so smart. I had the Yankees finishing fourth in the division at the start of the year and not making the playoffs. I mean, I didn't think they were going to be a horrible team, but I thought they were going to be an 85, 87 win team that even with the expanded wild card, they'd find themselves on the outside looking in. I didn't think they had the starting pitching, frankly. And so I had the Red Sox third in the division, getting the extra wild card spot. But I did not see this coming from the Yankees. I thought that maybe some of the Aaron Judge stuff was going to become an issue when he couldn't come to an agreement. Mm. That hasn't been the case by any stretch of the imagination. He's probably been the most productive hitter in the game through the first couple of months. And the starting pitching has been very good. A guy like Cortez kind of comes out of nowhere, right, and gives them a little depth in the middle of that rotation. Cole's been good, so shows you what I know, and doesn't as you said, I don't think they're going to keep up this pace and win 110 games here, but clearly they've given themselves a huge safety net. They're almost 20 games over 500 before we get to even Memorial Day, and that'll come in handy when the inevitable bump in the road happens at some point with injuries or underperformance and they grow cold. That's a nice soft cushion to fall back on when things don't go well.
It'll just make that ultimate collapse to fourth place that much more enjoyable for Red Sox fans.
Yeah, and then I can say, I told you all along at the beginning of the year that they weren't that good.
Sean McAdam, Boston Sports Journal. Sean, appreciate it as always. Great talking with you. Enjoy the game tonight, and we'll catch up with you again soon.
Always great talking to you, Rich. Thanks for having me.
Sean McAdam here on Downtown.